me. I always forget to start my stopwatch and time us. I'm Phil Parr, and it's good that you came along. It's good that that you're listening to our show. We approach blindness in maybe a little different sort of a way. We refer to it as a real inconvenience, and that it is. It is many other things, but our main purpose here is to help folks who've lost their eyesight or maybe are having a hard time dealing with being blind. Let them know that you can have a good, happy, fulfilled life. I have. Many of you have, and this lady has. Her name is Karen Myers from St. Louis. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. Thank you.
And St. Louis is your home. How did you, were you born and raised there? Are you a Missouri girl?
No. Actually, I'm an Illinois girl, central Midwest, central Illinois. And I have been basically from East Coast to West Coast in my work, and I work in higher education, colleges and universities, and the last place I was in Southern California, and we decided to come home, be closer to family, and now I'm a grandmother of twin boys, and so it was very important that I'm home and close by. So we moved back to St. Louis, and I work at St. Louis University as a professor.
The thing about those grandchildren is they'll be grown. You look around, and they'll be grown. I mean, they'll be 16, 17. That's the way it happened to us. My grandkids are, you know, Kimberly, my oldest grandkid is, hi, Phil, how are you? I'm driving the car now, you know.
I know. I see them growing very fast. They're only 18 months, but I don't know. I see them as 5 and 10 sometimes.
What is your level of vision?
I am, well, what is considered legally blind. I do have vision. I can't drive anymore. I did for a while. I quit driving at 25. I have extreme light sensitivity, so I wear dark lenses most of the time, lots of magnification. And what they've determined, we have about 20 people in our family with this. It's we've done some tests, and at this point they're saying that it's rod cone dystrophy, but that's fairly new to us. It started out as macular degeneration, and once we learned more about that, we said, no, that's not what it is. But all of these people in our family have different levels of it.
Really?
And, yes, and it is kind of different. Some of the doctors told us that there was one other family in the country who they've experienced this, and there's many people in the family who have this. But that's where we are now, so I take lots of buses and get lots of rides.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So you at one time, you had what people consider normal sight, is that right?
That is correct, yes.
As a teenager, you did the things that normal or other teenage children with normal sight do.
Yes, it was about when I was in, I think it was sixth grade when I first got glasses, and that's when, just for nearsightedness. And then my mom, she said, she kept watching me because I have an older brother and sister, and they both had this since they were children, and young children, and she used to watch me read because once I started what she would call shading my work, those were her words, shading your work.
Okay.
And it was, I put my hand over to cut the light out of what I was reading. That was a sign that the light must have been bothering me.
Okay.
And so she said, you know, she kept watching, you might have it. So anyway, but I did get through. I was able to get a driver's license. I was, what I couldn't see is the board at school. I noticed in high school I was doing really poorly in algebra, and I thought, I don't even see her writing anything up there.
Oh.
And that was when I was a freshman in high school, and I didn't realize that she was writing, especially on an overhead projector. I could see the board, if it was a dark blackboard, but the overhead projector, it was just washed out. I never did see what people were writing on those. And then that's when we started looking at me a little closer for this, but I still drove, and I drove till I was 25, and then I couldn't see a red light one day. And went through it, and luckily was safe, but I stopped at that point. I said, I cannot be doing this anymore.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. But
you think?
Well, I do think I'm cars. The older I get, the worse my phobia of automobiles is. I don't know why, but that's for another show. But you did have the thrill. I don't know if it's a thrill or not, but you did have the satisfaction of driving and of being a teenager through high school, basically as the other children.
Yes. Definitely. I was, and then even in high school, whether you have sight or not, I was very active in high school, class president, captain of the cheerleading squad, those kind of things. I did a lot of dance classes and things, and I was acting. That was my, and that ended up being a degree in college. First degree was theater, but I mean, very, very active where I needed eyesight, and I used it, and then got a little worse.
Because we talk to so many people that get it through high school, and then blindness really starts to become an issue for blind people in high school. I know that blindness robs children of some of their freedom in their play. In other words, they can't play hide and go seek with the sighted kids. But then in high school, it seems to manifest itself. But you got through high school, drove your car. Obviously, you got married. You wouldn't have grandkids.
I did.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a gift.
Yes.
And you went obviously to a regular, normal public school somewhere.
Yes. Yes. I went to Catholic schools through elementary and high school. And all-girls Catholic high school, and then in college, that's when I started going to a public school.
Yeah.
But yes, I was in all regular classes. I mean, there was nothing, at that point, nobody even knew about my vision. And when I got to college is when I started telling people about it, and that I needed some assistance, that I needed extended time on tests, or the light was too bright in the room, those kind of things. That's when I actually realized that I was having difficulty seeing.
Yeah.
Do my work. Yeah.
But you said that your college major was in drama.
Yes. Yes, I was a theater major. Yes, I love acting. It was on the acting side. I had one class though in theater where there's a fencing class. And I actually heard one of your shows where you were talking about fencing, and you were talking about building fences, and you said, oh, yes, we wouldn't want blind people to be fencing. Well, there I was.
Yeah.
I was fencing, and I was so scared I kept putting my hands up, because anytime anything came at me, my hands were up guarding my face.
Yeah.
And I finally told the instructor, I said, is there some other class I could take? Because they really do it for movement, and fluidity of movement and comfort with dance and your body and all
well,
of that.
Well, yeah, it's like Taekwondo, it's...
Exactly. And so I asked him, I said, no, I really can't see to do this. This is scary to me, and I'm not getting out of it what I should be getting out of it. So anyway, I took some other physical class and physical education at that point, I think is what they called it. But, yeah, we don't want me fencing. But the rest of it, I mean, what I found out is the older I got, the more difficult it was to read the script. And I would do things, I would write, bigger on the script or enlarge it. But that came later. I mean, I must have really, I don't know what I did. I squinted a lot or faked it, because with the bright lights on stage, you really can't see a lot.
I need to introduce you. You may know. Do you know a lady in California named Karen Applegren?
I don't.
You do not.
No.
Well, I'm going to send you her email address. She was in theater, actually tried out for some plays, and the last part she didn't get the guy because she was looking so hard to try to stay on her marks and try to do what this guy said, that he didn't give her the part. She was the best actress. He didn't hire her because he thought she was on drugs because she was looking at things so hard, and her eyes were focused so. And, it wasn't funny then, but it is now.
No, yeah.
I'll send you her email, and we'll have a lot
me
to
too.
Discuss.
Okay.
And so you, this fencing class, of course, we don't have duels anymore, thank God. And we don't do that, so we don't have to participate in that. So you got through college, and your degree ended up being in what?
My bachelor's degree is in theater and speech. I had kind of a double major, because then I went into more the public speaking side of things. I mean, I did do the theater degree, and then it was a combination with what they called speech. at the time, speech communication. And then I went on. I worked for a while. I say I must be on these 10-year programs or maybe 5-year to get degrees in. But I did my bachelor's, and then I taught for a while, did some things, and then I got a master's in communication. And then I taught and did some things in higher education. I was a higher ed administrator. I went on and got my doctorate in a PhD in higher education administration.
Uh-huh.
And so, which brings today, actually, is what I do. What I teach is master's and doctorate students in higher education administration. And those are people who either are in or want to be in administration in college and university.
Okay, but at some time, this interest in theater or this desire to be an actress, quote unquote, turned into a passion for writing, obviously.
Into what?
Into a passion for writing.
Oh, writing,
yeah.
Writing, yes. Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Well, I like to write all along, but, and then the theater, I think why I became a teacher, too, is because, you know, being up there in front of people, I mean, still that actress in me, you know?
Yeah.
And so that piece is in there. In fact, there's a little part in this book that we'll talk about later, but it's a little section on acting and me as the actress and always wanted to be the actress. But, yes, so I enjoy public speaking. I do public speaking, consulting, training, all of those kind of things, and I think that piece satisfies that. I have been thinking from time to time, I said, oh, I would love to go back on the stage. I would love to try out. I'd love to do something. And then I just haven't. But I still have that in me.
Yeah, I think once you get it, you never lose it. It's like
right. Radio.
You never get over that.
That's right.
And you, I mentioned at the first of our conversation that you write a thing for each month, or not each month, but it's bimonthly now, for Dialogue magazine.
I do.
Which,
yes, I do.
A lot of folks think Dialogue doesn't exist. It does. It is alive and well, and if you aren't subscribed to it, you should be.
Oh, definitely.
All right.
Definitely. It has so much helpful information and fun stories as well. And what I started to do, I have done a couple stories for them, but then it got into stories about education. And so now I write a column. It's under their section, Education Makes a Difference, and it's called Campus Voices. And each issue, I write a different story about a student, and it's a first-person story, and about that student's life as a college student with a visual disability.
Yeah, and that's, I think, so much of the things I read, and you also, are geared toward older blind people. We seem to forget that there's a huge population of young folks coming up. And I think that's good because you have a college student each time and their experience of how they're doing or how they're doing things or how they're handling their college experience.
Yes, yes. And you're right, it is different. And some of these, some of the students have been blind since birth.
Uh-huh.
Others have just acquired blindness through or low vision through some kind of illness or an accident or whatever, but they need to cope with that, and they're all at different stages. We all are developmentally, all people. But with blindness, there is, in fact, one of my friends has done developed a blind, it's a disability model is what it's called, in its levels of acceptance, where you are in the process. And so many times we haven't reached acceptance. We're still all, you know, dealing with it. And so with college students, it's the same thing. And when they go off, especially people who leave their homes, go into a new environment, live on campus, are now adults, and they need to communicate with professors, communicate with administrators and other students, and how do they get through this, you know, without faking it? And so many of us, I know, and it depends on the day, so many of us do fake it. It's like, you know, I'm not blind today. Forget it. I'm going to, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want people to know. And other times it's, oh, gee, I better tell people because I have to take a test or I have to write a paper, and it's very important that people know what I can and can't see.
Yeah, and that's not. I don't think that's of that as denial, but maybe you just don't want to deal with your blindness on a certain day, or you don't want to think about it, or you don't want to. You know it, but you want to. Because I worked many years and never really thought about myself being blind, and I had people working under me and around me, and nobody ever said, "Hey, blind man," you know. I was just another guy. So this appears in Dialogue every bi-monthly. You're in every issue, and I don't know subscribed. I think we might as well give that. It's Blind Skills, I think, and it's in Salem. You can find it if you type in Blind Skills. You'll come up with a way of getting that magazine if you don't already, and you should. It's very helpful.
Yes, actually, it's just www.blindskills.com.
Is it www.blindskills.com?
Yes.
And that'll get you in touch with the folks out at Dialogue Magazine.
Dialogue.
Now, the way I found you, when I heard about you, was through a book that you have written about your experiences as a blind person. And this is a recent thing. You just finished this. Go ahead.
Okay, it's been a while coming. Actually, what's interesting is I wrote a book in, when was it, 96, and have been sitting on it. It's one of those things I've tried to get it published different places and wanted to do, then I thought about self-publishing, and it was just one of those things. It's called The Glass Diary.
Uh-huh.
And it's not out yet because I'm still sitting on it. And it's a story about a young a girl from age 8 to 18, and she has she can't see her diary. She has low vision. She can't see her diary, and so she starts talking to her mirror, and her mirror is her diary. So this is a book that I have written. And I am now going to put it on CD because I want to get it out there. And I have not, it's not in hard copy. So that's where this all started. Then, at that same time, I started doing articles, just like I am in a way for Dialogue, only it was for an independent living center in central Illinois.
Uh-huh.
And I did articles on just living life with low vision, and I called it The Way I See It. And what I decided to do then is to take those articles and revise them a bit and put them into a book. I said each of these things are, you know, little interesting things about life. And so what you're talking about now and what I do have in hard copy as well as on CD and e-book is called The Way I See It, Bumping Into Life with Low Vision.
Bumping Into Life. I love it.
Bumping Into Life.
Yeah.
And because, you know, at first I started just The Way I See It, and it was all about stories about my life, different. I categorized them into daily activities, holidays, seasons, travel, and, you know, just things that I have done, and most of them were kind of humorous. And so, and with my family, like I said, I have 20 people in my family who have this visual disability.
Yeah.
And in my own family, it's my mom, my brother, and my sister. So growing up, we had lots of experiences and faux pas, if you will, and so living with low vision. So that's what a lot of these stories are, just about getting through it, bumping into life, as I say. And then what I do in each one of them is try to give some type of little lesson or the way I see it, this is what you need to do. And so when you're in this situation, so it doesn't happen to you or it doesn't happen again, this is what you can do. And I also, the reason, I've written it, one, it was just cathartic. It helped me talk about things in my life. But also, I think people, whether you have low vision, whether you're blind, even if you wear contacts and you lost your contacts or you lost your glasses, I mean, there are times in everybody's life where we bump into life.
Yes.
Whether it's at, crossing a street or in a job interview, and we didn't bring our glasses. I talk about a job interview in here. I talk about different holidays where I broiled a turkey rather than baked it, and so we didn't have turkey that that Thanksgiving. It was a little undone.
Yeah.
And then one of my favorite stories actually is called The Three Blind Wallpaper Hangers. And it was when my mom and my sister and I were hanging wallpaper in my sister's house. And Lord knows why we did it, because she was selling her house. So we thought, oh, sure, let's do wallpaper. And none of us can see. And so we got what we thought was just solid white wallpaper, or kind of a, you know, with no pattern, nothing that needed to be matched anyway. And we got done. Oh, you know, we had a great time doing it, and we got done, and our husbands came in to look at it, and they just were shocked, because it was totally, there was a pattern, and it was totally mismatched. And so anyway, I end the little story with the song to Three Blind Mice, but it's the Three Blind Wallpaper Hangers. So that was probably one of the things, you know, that is just kind of humorous in our life, as well as, you know, saying, excuse me, to parking meters, and, you know, waving to cars that don't have people in them, but you think they do because of the car seats. And I know when my mother's three little Catholic children, and there was one story when we were little kids, and my mom, we were walking by a car downtown, shopping, and she said, oh, wave to sister, and we were all waving to this car, and my mom thought it was a nun sitting in a car, and it turned out to be just a tall bucket seat. And I said, I was the one at that time who could see, and so I said, I set Mom straight on that one. And I was always telling her, no, Mom, you're wrong, you know, that's not what that is. And so now I probably do that all the time, because that's where I am now, telling my daughter to wave to nuns.
A humorous approach it's the only way to handle your day-to-day existence as a blind person is through not take it too seriously, because no matter who you are, you're going to have some of these little things happen to you.
Definitely.
If you deal with blindness on a day-to-day basis, you're going to put salt in your coffee. You know, you're going to put the wrong gas in your car or something. You're going to do blind things, and you might as well share them with others and laugh at them, because they are, to blind people who are dealing with blindness, they're humorous. And so you put these all in the collection. I think there are 21 of them?
20. Yeah, 21. Uh-huh. 21 stories.
But about
in fact,
this,
one of them is about the salivar. That's funny that you said about the salt, because I do. I said life is like a... like Forrest Gump, life is like a salad bar. You never know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
And just like that salad bar where you take the, you know, what you think is pudding is horseradish or something, and there it is on your plate, and you're eating it.
And what do you do? You have to deal with that, and that's going to happen to you. Now, but back to this fictional book that you wrote about the girl and her diary. Is that a full-length manuscript? I'd love to read that.
Yeah, yes it is. I mean, it's there, and originally, I haven't done anything yet, is I originally was working with an illustrator, and I was going to put pictures with it, and very vivid, I wanted it to be, I knew people who are totally blind couldn't see it, but people with low vision would be able to see it. I was going to have it all in very large print with very big pictures, but then, as I was showing people, too, they said, well, is this a children's book? Who is this for? And I said, well, not really. It's just for, I mean, parents with children with low vision, I think, would get something out of it.
Yeah.
People with low vision, whether you've, especially if you've lived through it. Now, it is from a young woman or a young girl and then into womanhood, her viewpoint. So maybe some boys might not get as much out of it as the girls would, but that's what it, you know, that's what it's about. And it is complete. And I just the other day I said, you know, I'm just going to, I put this other book, The Way I See It, on CD.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just selling that through me.
Yeah.
Rather than through a company. And so because they asked me for that, well, do you have it on CD? I said, no, I don't have it yet. So then I thought, well, maybe with this other book, I will just begin by putting it on CD.
I think so. You may be from a young lady's standpoint, but I can remember being 18 to 20 years old and just practically terrified as to, you know, how am I going to function as an adult? You know, what am I going to do? What can I do? Can I have a good car and a nice house and a lady and some children like everybody else? Or am I stuck selling brooms door to door? I was scared to death. And I think this would help maybe a lot of young blind people. We all handle it differently. We all go through it differently. And I chose not to do, of course, I'm old, and I chose not to do higher education. So so you plan to do that. But this this book of anecdotes is out now. We can have that now. Is that right?
Hello?
Yeah. There, we may have to do some editing. Karen Myers is our guest from St. Louis, Missouri, and she has written a book of anecdotes, things that have happened to her or friends of hers concerning being blind and little faux pas or things that may happen to you. She looks at them as humorous, and as far as I'm concerned, that's the only way to do it. So, but you're going to do this book that you've written about the young lady looking in the mirror that couldn't see her. You're going to put that on CD, but this other book is available now, and how could we get it? How can we obtain a copy of it?
Okay, there are three ways. As they said, it's called The Way I See It, Bumping Into Life with Low Vision. You can get the hard copy at www.trafford.com, and that's where it is. I have it on demand publishing. Also, it's available. I know I've seen it through Amazon.com and a few other things.
Really?
But if you type in Trafford, you can find it, or Amazon.com, you can find it.
Uh-huh.
That's the hard copy. The ebook version is through Moby Pocket, and that is www.mobipocket, MobiPocket, all one word, MobiPocket.com. And then I also have it on audio, on CD.
All right.
Read by the author. And people can buy that by making checks payable to me, Karen Myers, and that's K-A-R-E-N.
Uh-huh.
M-Y-E-R-S, and I have then my address at Karen Myers, 4934 Lansdowne Avenue, L-A-N-S-D-O-W-N-E Avenue, St. Louis, Missouri, 63109. I also have an email address. Actually, I have two email addresses that people can contact me. One is The Way I See It, all one word,
okay,
at gmail.com. And the other is K.A. Myers, M-Y-E-R-S, 1, and that's a number 1,
yeah,
at gmail.com.
K.A. Myers at what now?
Oh, K.A. Myers, 1,
uh-huh,
the number 1,
uh-huh,
at gmail.
Gmail.
G-M-A-I-L.
K.A. Myers, 1, at gmail. That'll probably be the easiest. If you didn't write the address down, you can send a message to you, and you'll send them the physical address as to where to send a check.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is correct.
And it is in, this book is out in hardcover?
Yes. This one is, I published it through Trafford Publishing, uh-huh, and it is, it's in hardcover, and it's in sort of large print. I tried to make it, it's between 12 and 14 point, and so if you have low vision, you might be able to see it. I can actually see it, and my family can with magnifiers, and actually sometimes without magnifiers. And then also the e-book, a lot of people are downloading books.
Yeah.
And so the one way I was able to do that is through Moby Pocket. And I was told that you also, when you do that, you download the Moby Pocket Reader, but
uh-huh,
it is free, and that's how you can read it. I am interested, though, to know if that is not accessible to people, I would be interested in knowing that, because this is new to me and this is a new company and I'm not that familiar with it, but I wanted to give that a try. But then the real thing was I wanted to get it on CD.
Sure.
So that people could listen to it. And then the other thing that I was just going to tell you, we were talking a little about the other book, The Glass Diary, and you had said, is it a full manuscript? Mm-hmm. And I said, yes, and it is. It's complete in that it's a full manuscript. What it is excerpts of her, the young woman, her name's Megan, of her conversations with her mirror, her journal entries, basically. So as if you were writing a journal, she's speaking to her mirror, and so these are little excerpts from those conversations. So that it's just in that format, just so that just wanted to clarify what the book sort of, what its format is.
And she, this is a fictional lady that you have. She is partially blind.
Yes.
This might be not exactly, but this might be some thoughts that you thought when you were 18, 20 years old. How old is she?
I bet so.
You wouldn't.
Well, and what's interesting is when I was reading it, too, my daughter, was growing up, and I had lots of experiences of her, and she has, right now, 20/20 vision.
Yeah.
And thank goodness. But for me, I mean, nothing wrong with not having 20/20 vision, but by having somebody in the family who does, you know, she's the driver and
sure.
stuff like that. But anyway, she, so I have her story too. So as she was growing up, some of it is her being a child. You know, I put lots of people that I know into Megan.
Uh-huh.
Myself, my sister, my mom, my daughter. And other people I know. So,
because you have lots of blindness around you. You've been around a lot of partially blind people, and so you put them all in your book. I will be interested to read that when it comes out, and also this other one. Now, there's one more question: is the condition you have, is there a possibility that in future we will be able to cure that?
No one has said that at all. I will say, years ago, my brother had he lived in Philadelphia, and he went to Will's Eye Hospital,
uh-huh.
and they did try some laser treatment. They thought maybe that they could stop it. At one point, they talked about that that they thought maybe that they could freeze something from, I'm trying to think what it was, if it was the retina was deteriorating. And they said maybe if they could stop that from deteriorating, but anyway, it was not going to work. And so, and now with the rod cone dystrophy is what they're saying now. So we have not been told that. We have also been told that we will never go totally blind, be totally blind.
That's great to know.
Yes. Yeah. So, and my mom, she's in her 80s, and hers is stabilized. She can probably see what I can see now, and I think she can see much better than my brother can see. So she said in her life it just stopped getting any worse or decreasing, and that was probably when she was in her 60s or 70s. So I think mine has gotten my vision has decreased over the years, especially my peripheral vision.
Uh-huh.
Now people can be right behind me and I don't know it, and I jump or I'm in their way in stores or things.
Yeah.
But.
And your mother in her 80s, can she still read some? Can she still see a printed page?
Oh, yeah, with her magnifiers.
Yeah.
She loves, she'll read the paper. We'll give her things. She has that magnifying glass with her all the time. And she listens to talking books and watches video descript movies.
Uh-huh.
She does all of that. And the thing is, she and I were having this conversation the other day because she has had this since she was a child. And in fact, there's one little story in the Glass Diary book where the little girl breaks her glasses on purpose, and that was my mom. My mom, when she first got glasses, she hated them. She said when she was a child, she broke them just on purpose. But anyway, then she had this all her life, and so she's so used to it. So now she works. She does a lot of volunteering at a nursing home, and she sees people who are just getting macular degeneration. In fact, my dad, who has driven for 65 years, just now had to stop driving. And he's 89. He just turned 89 this week. And this is hard. And it was just this year he stopped. And he's doing very well, but at the same time, I said, Mom, you know, Mom's used to this. Mom's used to not driving and, you know, taking buses and getting rides, and it's no big deal. And I said, this is new for Dad. This is all new for Dad, so we need to cut him a little slack here, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But now she doesn't have her rides either. So both of them are experiencing calling friends and taking the bus, and I give them all the encouragement. My brother and sister and I, we're all in the same boat. So we're like, yeah, you can do it, Mom. You can do it. You can do it, Dad. Just hop on that bus. But then we also have to remember they're in their 80s, but they're very active, and so he bowls three times a week. We're, you know, we're very fortunate that to have them, and they have their health and their and a positive attitude about low vision. But I just have to. I'm the only one in my family who can relate to my dad having to stop driving. But I said, I only did it after, 10 years I stopped, and Dad is 65. So that's quite a change, you know, in someone's life.
It would be quite a change. Even at 89, to you it's normal because you've dealt with it all these years.
Exactly.
Now, but this eye condition that you have is on your mother's side. It's not your father's family does not have this.
That's correct.
Your dad
We believe it was my mom's dad. It wasn't my mom's mother. It was my mom's dad, but he died when she was 13. So we don't have a lot of family, to go back and find out what everybody had. She knew that he had poor vision. That's what my mom knew. But that was about it. So we think that's where it's from.
I keep saying, right, wrong, or otherwise, that we're looking, and I think we're looking at possibly the last generation of blind people, because you know about the bionic type of eye that gives you straight-ahead vision that costs an immense amount that they're doing experiments with. I know you've read about this, if not heard about it, and it supposedly will give you vision. Of course, a person like me who's never seen, they'd have to tell me that was a table, because I wouldn't know that. Just if I saw it, I wouldn't have any idea what it was. It would just. So I don't know. I think medical science is coming up with so many things now that we may be. This blindness thing may not exist.
That could be. One thing I would like to say, though, is back when I did my dissertation on. My dissertation for my doctorate was on college students with visual disabilities and their communication styles and perceptions, how they want to be treated.
Uh-huh.
And one thing that I found out by interviewing all of these people, and it was ages 18 through 65, people who are going to college, that when I asked them the question, would you rather not be the way you are? Would you rather have your vision? You know, if you could take the magic pill, would you change things?
Yeah.
And almost all of them said no. They said that this was part of their lives. Now, especially the ones who had no vision especially from birth or early on, they said that is who they are. That is part of their character, part of their makeup, and that's that's basically who they are, and they wouldn't change it. So I just think that's interesting because and you think about it too. The past 20 years I've been so involved in disability issues, advocacy, writing, all of these things, teaching. I teach a class now on disability. And having that be such a part of my life, and it all came from my low vision. If I could see, if I had 20/20 vision, would that be different? Would I still be the advocate? Would I still do the writing? I wouldn't have these experiences. And so you just wonder, you know, would people change? You know, would you? Would you take the magic pill?
No, I wouldn't. But then I'm 67 years old, and I've been blind a long time, and I'm used to it. I know how to handle it. The only thing is, I think sometimes I'd like to know what it's like to be able to see. To my wife standing at the door 50 feet from me and hollering, stop, Phil, you're about to run into, how in the hell can she see that 50, 60, 100 yards? How does that work? I can't grasp it. My mind won't fit around it because I've never seen anything. I wouldn't change. My life is good, and why, hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Let me be free. whatever that means. Don't see this change as a threat on our love. Let me be me. Leaving's not on my mind. But no restrictions, please. Let me be me. Let me.
Talking about this thesis or dissertation you did about asking college-age children or college-age people if you could see, would you want to? And most of them, would you? What percentage of them said no? 90%?
I would say probably around 90%. Yes. Yes, it was interesting. I interviewed about, I believe it was about 28 students who were from the ages of 8 to 65. They were all current college students, either taking full or part-time class loads, and they all had some type of visual disability, anywhere from low vision to blindness, total blindness. What did you call them the other day? People without vision. You had something clever. You said.
Well, I doubt that. But anyway, I don't know what it was.
I don't know, but it was kind of cute. But anyway, the people without vision.
Blind folks. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, yes. And so, and I was asking them, a lot of my interest in this topic was about how they perceive communication, how people communicate with them, and how they are comfortable or what makes them comfortable in communicating. And so when first I started talking about their lives, and one of the questions I did ask was, would you go back? Would you have full vision if you could? And what was interesting is the people, I don't have the percentage right on top of my head, but the majority of the people who were born blind said, no, this is part of me. This is who I am. It's a characteristic of me. It is just a part of me. And so, no, I wouldn't change that. And then only a few people who have lost their vision more recently said, oh, yeah, you know, I'd go back. I used to drive. I like that, you know, and that sort of thing. Yeah, and so it was interesting, and what I was saying to you a little bit ago was that, and myself, I really had to stop and think because I started losing my vision in high school and really stopped driving when I was 25. So it was quite, you know, I had gotten through my teens and starting into adulthood, and I have been thinking about that because a lot of my life has revolved around disability, whether it's disability education, advocacy, writing, you know, teaching. I teach a class on disability. So those kind of things, I think, well, my life would have changed. And so now would I, as I said, do you take the magic pill or not?
Would you?
And, yeah. So I thought it was interesting about that most people, though, said, no, this is part of my life, and this is who I am, and I like me.
I have a friend named Don Patterson that I've known. I went to school with Don. We've known each other 60 years. He is still bothered and really just, one of his big things is, I can't drive. He's got very, very high partial. I'd ride with him if we needed to go somewhere. He's really high partial, but it just drives him nuts that he can't drive. It doesn't bother me one iota that I can't drive. No, I never think about. Sometimes if my wife and I have an argument and she gets mad and leaves, I think that's an option you have that I don't. Now, that doesn't happen very often, but it has happened. You know, we've all got wives and husbands, and we've all had arguments. And she a couple of times when we've had a little tiff, she just, well, I'll just leave. And so she just left and drove around and came back. I'm not imitating her. She's not an old woman. She's a lovely, and I love her to death. Jesus, I hope she doesn't hear this. But anyway, I've thought a couple of times, well, that's an advantage you have that I don't. That's the only time I ever think about, but no, I wouldn't take the pill, but I'm old. You'd think those young folks, 22, 23, 26, 20 years old, would take it if they could.
Yeah, and that's what surprised me, because some of them were that young. It wasn't the older people who said that. It was some that were, the 18 through 21, I would say. And I said, wow, you know, and they were so confident. It was amazing that the people that I interviewed, I mean, they are college students. They were successful college students, and they had confidence. And that, I think that's wonderful. I think that's one thing that I always encourage parents and family members to do, is to help the people in their families with low vision or who are blind to build their self-esteem, to allow them to do things. I think that's one of the hardest things. I just wrote an article. Actually, I think it'll be in the next dialogue for about a college student who's. Parents were very protective and didn't want the student to go away to school or to leave home, even across the street. And now he's a college student. So I think that kind of encouragement is very important.
I think one thing that may account for the confidence of college-age children now is the computer.
Yes.
Because while it didn't level the playing field, it sure did put all the blind people on the same page.
Yes.
We all know what's out there and what's available if we're willing to fool with computers. We all know, if a new gadget comes out, well, I know it as soon as you do.
That's right.
We all know that. We all know we can exchange. We're all on lists. And if you run across a problem that your screen reader won't do, all you got to do is ask the list. And some guy on there's already done that, you know? So
we're
all much more on the same page now than ever before, thank God for the Internet.
Yes, exactly. And I think a lot of times when I'm in different organizations, and I don't use a screen reader, but I've worked around a lot of students and other folks who do. And so one thing I always say is our website accessible? Is whatever you're sending out, is that accessible? Can people use the screen readers? And once in a while, they'll run into things where they just can't, and there's no way to do it. And so we encourage those organizations or the schools or whoever putting it out to make their materials more accessible.
I spent the morning downloading books to my card that goes in my stream and downloading NLS books. And I've been using authors. I like James Patterson, and I like two or three different authors that I like. And I've been selecting books, and I read everything that they had by authors that I liked. So I thought, hell, I'll just start at the top of this list and go down and find hidden treasures. And when I started, I thought, there are 9,000 books, Mr. Phil, that you can look through. 9,000 books you can download. Every one of them. Any one of them free. And it's just, you know, that's a big move forward as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, definitely.
Of course, Bookshare, you know about Bookshare and all that. There's lots of textbooks there and yes. RFB and D. So it's,
Yes.
As I like to say, if you got to be blind, it's a great time to be blind.
It really is.
It is.
I'll agree with you.
I didn't want to be blind, but here I am, and I'm very happy with it. Listen, I've got a little thing I'm going to stick on the end that has your email address for your book, and I'll look forward to you putting this other book that you've written that you haven't published. We need to get it out also. I think it would be very helpful to a lot of young blind people.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to that. In fact, I talked to somebody just yesterday, and they said I'm going to do that within the next couple weeks.
All right. I'm going to stop my my equipment here, and then I'll... let's do. Let's don't push our luck. Give me your simple email address one more time, and let's conclude with that. Okay.
Okay.
Karen I forget what it is.
It's K A Myers. That's M Y E R S 1, and that's a number 1. So K A Myers 1 at gmail.com.
All right. K A Myers 1 at gmail.com. I don't know, Karen, when I'm going to run this. We didn't do quite a full hour, so I'll have to put something with it. But I will, and I'll be in touch, and thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right.
Nice
look,
meeting you.
Look forward to seeing your dialogue.
Thank you.
What an interesting lady, Karen Myers from St. Louis, Missouri. Skype dropping in and out and giving us fits. Dropped out 3 times during that interview. I don't know what the deal was, but mostly Skype is pretty steady. Let me mention very quickly here that if you have not offered yourself as a guest for our show, we could use your help. I don't care who you are or where you are. We've done about 170 of these things and plan to do probably 30 or 40 more and would like to have you as a guest. You may think your life is not interesting enough to share with other people, but believe me, it is. We look for all kinds of people. We're not looking for superstars or folks who've done amazing things. We're just looking for blind people who are dealing with blindness on a day-to-day basis. And that would be you, right? Come and be a guest on the show. You can get a hold of me by dialing 936-634-9500, or you can email me at philparr, all one word, philparr, at consolidated, consolidated, consolidated.net. That will get you in touch with me. So we do, of course, the blind handyman. If you do any sort of work along those lines, repair anything that you might do that would result in handyman things, we need we always need people on the handyman show. In fact, we have more guests for blind like me than we do the blind handyman for some reason, and I don't know why that is, but it is. What is. And so if you can help us out with our little blind handyman show, we'd appreciate it. Phil Parr at consolidated.net. Let me also mention, while we have your attention here and have a couple of minutes, that we are planning a gathering in November of this year in Houston, Texas, of folks who listen and are fans of The Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me. We're all going to get together in Houston and not do a whole lot. We never do a whole lot. We just visit and try to record some shows and do show and tell with all the new things that everybody has. If you have a new gadget, we want you to bring it and show it to us so we can all sort of be on the same page as far as gadgets for the blind are concerned. We do a lot of that, and we play a lot of music. We'll give you details of that if you'll keep listening. We'll let you know where that's going to be and what it costs and all that. So start saving your shekels and come and join us in Houston. This will be the last one. If you missed this one, you missed it, because I am sort of leaning toward retiring and folding my tents and going somewhere else and doing something else after November. That is not set in cement, but that's the way I'm feeling now, thinking about now. So this will definitely be the last gathering of the Blind Handyman, Blind Like Me clan. Got to stop sometime, don't you? Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Philparr at consolidated.net is my email address. And if you want to do handyman, I'll get you hold of Don Shaw, who books the guests for that show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time with more Blind Like Me. Bye-bye.